In this wide world of sports, some stories can slip through the cracks.
Now, before we do this, let's go over the ground rules.
Pelican Brewing presents The Daily Ticker, where Dirt and Sprague hit the big stories you've heard about, and some you haven't.
How'd you do that? I'm not even mad. It's amazing.
The Daily Ticker with Dirt and Sprague is brought to you by Pelican Brewing, independently brewing on the Oregon coast since 1996. Crack open a can of Beat Breaker Double IPA and take a bold, hoppy break. Pelican Brewing, born at the beach.
All right, Daily Ticker time. Top of the hour here, 1080 The Fam. Daily Ticker is always brought to you by Pelican Brewing Company. They invite you to take a beach break at one of their four coastal locations, Cannon Beach, Tillamook, Pacific City, and the newest one at the south end of Lincoln City. Pelican Brewing Company, born at the beach.
Perfect guest for a Pelican-sponsored segment. We got Huffman.
We do. We got Huffman. Huffman. Brandon Huffman, our good friend, National Recruiting Director for 24/7 Sports, at Brandon Huffman on Twitter is where you can go. Find him. Brandon, good morning to you. We got a lot we want to get to you. There's some big news potentially on the horizon for Oregon we'll ask about. But this Nico story has really taken the college football and really sports world by storm here about a kid, you know, holding out of practice. I mean, it's a very NFL-ish story, right? Like, I'm holding out. I want a new deal. The parents are saying, no, we didn't want more money. Seems like he's heading towards UCLA. You follow this stuff way closer than we do. Was there any indication that this is how it would kind of transpire for him? And what have you made of this story at Tennessee?
I mean, I don't know that there was any indication that it would transpire and play out the way it did with him returning to Southern California. But remember, this is the guy that really tore the, you know, broke the emergency glass door on NIL. When his story came out 3 years ago that, you know, an SEC school was willing to pay a Southern California quarterback, when The Athletic broke the story and nobody knew who it was until we quickly found out who it was, are we surprised that it played out this way when he was really the guy that kind of crashed through the glass ceiling to say this is where we are at with NIL and how it's factoring into recruiting? I can't say it's too much of a surprise other than maybe the way it played out.
Without naming names, unless you want to name names, how often in your line of work, you go to a lot of these camps, you help put on camps, you cover this very closely. How often do you meet parents that become kind of the driving representation and force of these players?
I mean, it's been the running joke in my 23 years in the industry. There's parents, and then there's quarterback parents, and then there's quarterback dads, and they are in their own stratosphere. And honestly, some of the most psychotic quarterback dads are the ones that played in the NFL. I mean, I still have emails from John Elway and Joe Montana not happy with their son's ratings 15 years ago. And, you know, they always drop in, well, I won a Super Bowl. Well, that's great. So, you know, you won a Super Bowl. John Elway, you destroyed the Broncos quarterback depth chart, and it doesn't mean anything. But quarterback dads have taken it to another level. And, you know, there's a fascinating book that came out a couple of years ago by Yogi Roth about the five-star quarterback. And there was a chapter in there that talked about how much parents are paying for quarterback training. And when you see how much they've invested in their son's development and training, they want that return on the investment, and they think it's going to be worth far more than maybe it was. And in a lot of cases, they overplay their hands, and now you have a situation like this or Jaden Rashada's.
Okay, so let me ask. I got two things here I got to ask you. One, follow up on something you just said. What do you respond to when Joe Montana's emailing me saying, Brandon, I heard your segment today on the football. This is why you're wrong. Signed, Joe Montana, Super Bowl winning quarterback. I don't even know what I would say in response to it. Maybe thanks for listening, but it's Joe Montana. And two, how is this going to maybe change, if any, in any way at all, the way that coaches and programs proceed, or is this a one-off?
Well, now I just tell them if I have an email like that, hey, my email is actually Greg Biggins at 24/7 Sports. Email him. Here's the thing. I don't know that it's going to change anything, because we were told 3 years ago when this wasn't pay to play that things were going to change. And then, you know, everything is going to be, oh, they're going to find a way to put the toothpaste back in the No, they're not. The toothpaste is out. The genie is out of the bottle. I don't think it changes anything. If anything, and I think we saw this about a year ago amidst the Mel Tucker reports when he had been placed on leave at Michigan State. And there was a story that came out that a number of players were on a flight to a Big Ten road game, and they were not going to play that weekend. because they were being told that their NIL payment wasn't going to come through. The collective was upset with how things were going, and they almost backed out. Now, it wasn't a high-profile quarterback like Nico, who, again, kind of set this bar high 3 years ago, but there's been rumors for the last year that players were going to sit out the NCAA tournament if their NIL payment didn't come in. So I think the only thing this did is that the quiet part was now said out loud.
Interesting. Brandon Huffman is our guest, national recruiting editor, 24/7 Sports, good friend of the show, at Brandon Huffman on Twitter. You can go give him a follow there. This leads to a follow-up question just about, in general, spending on that position with your NIL collective. So Nico was in that same class as Arch Manning, who I know we're all just, you know, we're assuming will go on to great things this year, but we don't know that he certainly will.
He's a Manning,
so we assume that he'll be great, but he hasn't played a ton, right? Obviously, his first 2 years in college. When I look at 2 through 7, I believe this was the 24/7 ranking. Nico was number 2, and he was solid last year, but now he's in the portal, likely heading to UCLA. Dante Moore started year 1. It didn't go great for him at UCLA. He hits the portal. He goes to Oregon. Jackson Arnold was number 4. He's at Oklahoma. Gets benched. Now he's at Auburn, I believe. Malachi Nelson started at USC, then transferred to Boise State, and I don't believe has a home yet for his third school.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Jaden Rashada was number 6, started Arizona State right away, hits the portal after the first offseason, goes to Georgia. I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think he has a home yet.
Technically was going to Florida.
He does not yet.
Okay, does not yet. And then Aiden Childs was number 7, who now that was a unique one where his coach left, and so he followed his coach. Mm-hmm. But this just led, like, I've looked at Oregon this way, and we'll get to the question on Jared Curtis, because I think he's the number 1 quarterback in the country. Like, Oregon has been hesitant, I think, to spend big money on a quarterback and instead have gone for the known commodities in the likes of a Bo Nix or a Dylan Gabriel. How do you see this market evolving, especially when you see so many of these guys either maybe not fully live up to the potential, or teams still going to be saying, whatever, this is the number 2 quarterback, I'm going to pay him whatever he wants. Like, how does that market evolve in your mind?
Well, it's going to evolve because you're going to see schools do what they did with Bryce Underwood last year, where Michigan had to bring in a big guy, whatever the CEO of Oracle's name is, Larry Ellison, whose wife's like 40 years younger than him, but a Michigan grad. And all of a sudden he's now tied to the Bryce Underwood NIL deal. And there was reports that thing was upwards of $11 million. I mean, I think it's evolving in that it is, with no pun intended, it literally is becoming an arms race. And so you're willing to pay for a top player, but you also have to understand the risks that are coming with the top player. Is there's parties that are attached to said player that maybe don't have the player's best interest in mind. You know, it's fascinating when you talk about what that top 10 class was. 24/7 Sports got a ton of shrapnel for keeping Arch Manning number 1. If his name was anything else, he wouldn't be the number 1 player. I think we were the only ones that named him number 1. And then you look at 2 through 10. You know, ESPN's number 1 player is Malachi Nelson. He's at UTEP. I mean, I didn't even realize that, you know, UTEP still was mentioned as a football place outside of the Sun Bowl host game. And you couldn't get as far away. He got beat out by a 5'10" quarterback at Boise State last year who took him to the playoffs. And he went from being Lincoln Riley's hand-picked guy at Oklahoma and everything Lincoln Riley picked and touched turned to gold to now playing at UTEP. You know, Dante Moore has the potential to be a guy. But you go down that list too. Aiden Childs, he's been probably the most consistent quarterback, if you will, in this group in terms of playing time as a freshman and as a sophomore. Austin Mack also left with Kalen DeBoer from Washington to Alabama. He's being mentioned. Actually, I guess Avery Johnson probably the most consistent quarterback. And, of course, his name's the one that's been talked about a bunch over the last, 96 hours when Nico went to the portal. People are saying, hey, well, Tennessee's going to try to get him away from Kansas. But Kansas State rode with Avery Johnson instead of Will Howard, and all Will Howard did was win a national championship. So that's the point is Oklahoma decided to ride with Jackson Arnold instead of Dylan Gabriel, and it blew up for Oklahoma. So that's the thing. Even if you're making these expensive gambles, there's no guarantee it's going to pay off. And we're seeing a litany of schools that it has blown up famously in their face.
How exhausted are the college coaches with dealing with this stuff, this unregulated NIL world? And is this making it and impacting high school coaches with the ones you talk with?
Yeah, I mean, it's frustrating high school coaches because they're realizing that their player that might have been a sleeper, might have been a late offer type of guy, a developmental player that, you know, in the old days, you would be the 25th player in a class. You wouldn't see the field for 3 years. They didn't want you to see the field for 3 years. But by your fourth year, you might have the opportunity to get on the field. Now, those guys aren't existing anymore. We're not taking 25 guys in a class. My sleeper developer is going to have to go down a level, and perhaps that impacts my school's reputation that I can't get my guys to a higher level. And yet, you look at Oregon. I mean, Mark Hamper was one of the top five players in the state in 2023 class, goes to Idaho, becomes a Big Sky All-American, goes into the portal, and all of a sudden the entire country wants him. I mean, now you're seeing guys that are having to go to a smaller level to start, but if they do any kind of production there, they're making the jump back to the FBS. Well, high school coaches are now dealing with the fallout of that because their players aren't getting recruited as much. And what they're also seeing, and here's a dirty little secret that people don't know. I've spent the last 3 days in communication with a number of players that I covered when they were in high school that are in the 24 or the 23 classes. Some even signed in 2025, and the coaching change at their school gave them the conversation last week with that new staff that, hey, you're going to need to go into the portal. You need to fund. So they go into the portal. They put the tweet out that they're going in the portal. All the fans are like, you're afraid to compete. No, they want to be there. But coaches are cutting them and telling them, hey, you got to go. We don't want you here. We need your spot. That's the part that a lot of people aren't understanding, is that it's now having a trickle-down effect to the 84th man, the 85th man on the roster, and he's being bounced, and now the high school coach is scrambling trying to find him a place to go.
Yeah. Brandon Huffman is our guest. You can follow him on Twitter, at Brandon Huffman, national recruiting editor for 24/7 Sports. You can also check out his obvious great work that he does with the Avery Huffman, Avery Strong Foundation.
Does great work on CBS Sports Network, too.
Yeah, absolutely does. I'm curious, Oregon question for you, Brandon. They have a chance, it seems like, maybe to sign. I've seen some rumblings behind the scenes that the top two tackles in the country, one of them is Jackson Cantwell, who I think is committing next week or the week after, right around the corner. I don't know how to say the other – Emmanuel, I don't know how to say his last name. What are the chances? What are the chances they get both of those guys? And then where are they at on Curtis? Because I think on the 24/7 composite rankings, Cantwell's one, Curtis is two, and the other offensive lineman is four.
Yeah, I mean, this could end up being, for all the gnashing of teeth and the hand-wringing with a couple of players that flipped from Oregon to USC in the last few weeks, Tom Tupoy, Jonas Williams, Oregon might end up in a better situation if they can get a Jared Curtis and then at least one, if not two, potentially elite offensive tackles. And here's the thing. If you remember when Mario Cristobal left Oregon and Alex Mirabal went with him, there was the feeling that Oregon was not going to be able to recruit really good offensive linemen with an offensive line head coach and an offensive line guru as his assistant. Well, what do they do 3 or 4 months after those guys leave? They sign the number one tackle in the country in Josh Connerly. They get the number one portal offensive lineman this year in Isaiah World, and now they are in a good position to potentially land both. I think realistically, they probably are more likely to get one of the two, and they may not get either of them. But one ace in the hole that Oregon does have here is the track angle with Jackson Cantwell. I mean, that could be something that ultimately lands them him, given his family ties in the track community, in the, you know, historically with track. And for a school that was supposed to have be impacted negatively by losing two offensive line gurus, they may end up on a bender here where they get another elite offensive lineman with this same offensive line coach, Leek Terry, and Adrian Quimby for him. I think Oregon is showing that, hey, they'll play the long game. They don't mind losing a guy here in March or April, but they could really put themselves in a position, and almost by virtue of just losing Jonas Williams, they could end up with a better quarterback in Jared Curtis.
This might be a tough question for you to answer. One, who does Curtis comp? Like, what is the comp with Curtis? Because I heard the Underwood kid reminds a lot of people of Cam, just the physical nature of him. Who does Jared Curtis remind Brandon Huffman of? And is Oregon amongst the elite of the elite of how they're handling this NIL high school / portal stuff?
Yeah, I mean, to answer the latter question, I definitely think that they are elite among the elite. I mean, you look at the schools that they outlasted for players last year, of who they were able to flip guys away from, going and getting a Naeem Offord out of Alabama, who had been committed to Ohio State for as long as he was, and Auburn and Alabama are both trying to keep him in state, and Oregon plucks him at the last minute, holding on to DeCorian Moore for as long as they did. I think that, Oregon, it's no secret that Oregon has the NIL to be competitive with anything, but I think that is often a crutch that fan bases that aren't in Eugene or outside the Eugene jurisdiction you know, they ride on that. Oh, well, these kids are only going there for NIL. Well, no, what you got to understand is when you talk to high school kids across the country, and especially you talk to the kids that are in the West, you ask them what school they grew up rooting for, and they're all saying Oregon. This is the team that has been the it team in their region for the last decade. It's been a national brand. So sure, is NIL attractive? Yes. But Oregon was getting players before NIL was a thing because they become such a national brand. And I think that that's something that, you know, not enough credence is given to, that Oregon has a national brand reputation. There's a reason they, you know, historically they've been able to go into the Southeast, into the Midwest, into even the Northeast, and were able to get kids to come there. It was because these kids grew up watching Oregon on television. They would see Oregon playing in games, you know, and so they knew the kind of stage that they would be on going to Oregon. Now, in terms of Jared Curtis, I think physically he reminds me a little bit of Drew Aller. And that's not a bad comparison. I mean, Drew Aller will be remembered for the last pass he threw in the Orange Bowl, which was an interception. But Drew Aller also got Penn State to the semifinals and knocking on the door of playing for a national championship. And their only two losses of the year, or three losses to the year, were to the team that was number one for the majority of the year and then the two teams that played the national championship game. And, you know, just like James Franklin, yeah, he didn't win any of the big ones last year, but he's had them competitive. And I think that that's a pretty good comfort for Jared Curtis, because Drew Aller came out, he was the number one quarterback his senior year in 2022, and now he's probably the most trusting quarterback out of that class and a likely first rounder in 2026. So if that's who Jared Curtis is comped to in terms of the physical traits, that's some pretty good company to be in.
Yeah, great stuff. Brandon Huffman, national recruiting editor for 24/7 Sports. Check out all the great work he does with the Avery Huffman Foundation, Avery Strong. It's an incredibly inspirational story. We always appreciate the time, man.
Huffman.
Great insight, and let's do this again soon.
Let's do it. Thanks, guys.